Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, November 9th, 2014. If I seem a little distracted, it's because I'm watching the Niners game. It's okay. I'll come back. All right, this is episode 1134. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is it. Yep, you found it. The show where we just sit and geek out for a couple hours every weekend. I'm glad you're here, though. If you have a, you don't have to be a geek to listen. In fact, it's fine if you're not. Because I try to do this in English. If you have a question or a comment, or you want some help, maybe some purchasing help, a little help on the a little handholding on the information superhighway. Our phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll free. From anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, and then outside those areas, we welcome your calls. Just use some VoIP solution to call that number. You do have to call that phone number. We have no other means of receiving your call. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And we love to hear from you. We can talk about anything on your mind. Certainly, this is the season. Tis the season. I know it's not even Thanksgiving yet, but already we're starting to think geeks for gift, gifts for geeks, geeks for gifts, or gifts for geeks. You could give a geek for a gift. You know, I think there's many a household that would love to have, you know, like just a geek in the broom closet that they could pull out and say, can you get this TV tuned to the football game? I can't figure it out. And the only reason I say that is because it seems to be something that I end up doing a lot for my loved ones, the people around me, my friends. I could extend that circle as broadly as I wish, but who has time? Setting up Pandora, getting the TV to work, making sure the internet works, getting printers to work. That's a fun one. A lot of the people who listen to this show are in that cadre, the geek cadre. They go around from house to house helping friends and family figure this stuff out. Don't you wish you could just, you know, geek in a box? I think maybe at some point we'll have that. I saw last night the new Matthew McConaughey Anne Hathaway movie Interstellar. Quite enjoyed it. It's long. Bring lunch, a water bottle, a catheter, because it's a long movie. Very, very long. But there is in it, I don't think this is not a spoiler, I don't think, there is in it an artificial intelligence robotic thing. You can't have a science fiction movie without a robot that's, you know, humanoid. In this case, they don't look humanoid at all, which is kind of cool. I like that they didn't make them like androids, like they do in Alien, you know. Now, that's a spoiler, actually. But if you haven't seen Alien by now, I can't. It's too late. And it talks. It's one of my favorite actors, a guy named Bill Irwin, who's a San Francisco guy. He used to be with the Pickle Family Circus, and he's just a wonderful mime and a comic actor, but also and he's perfect for it. He imbues it with life and yet makes it sound mechanical at the same time. And I think that at some point we'll have something like that. Don't you? Maybe not. It's hard. There are a few things that are hard to do. Probably certainly moving around is tough, although we're making good progress on that. I have a little device right over here. You slot an iPad. It's roughly humanoid, no arms. And instead of legs, it's got Segway-like wheels that it balances on. And then where the head would be is a holder for the, you slot your iPad in there. And it can be run by a human and walk around and look at things. It's what they call a telepresence unit. I mean, that's right there. It exists. Reason I'm thinking about this, you know, so there's mobility. The hard thing is probably voice recognition and then speaking back in a normal way. And that turns out to be a very difficult challenge. The reason I mention this is Amazon has a new product called maybe you've seen the video, the Amazon Echo. Always ready, connected, and fast. And this is, you know, clearly.
I didn't know what it was.
Here's the video for it.
You'll see.
Dad has gone to the porch to pick up a box.
Is it for me?
It's for everyone.
Labeled Amazon.
It's called Amazon Echo.
It's a little black tube.
How's it going?
I'm just finishing up right now.
Dad is obviously a complete geek.
Oh, it's always on.
Can it hear me right now?
Nope. It only hears you when you use the wake word we chose.
Yeah, okay, wait a minute. Now, let's stop right here. Okay, so we've got a little cylinder that came in a box from Amazon, and we're just going to put it in the middle of the home, turn it on. It plugs in. It's not a battery. It has a speaker. It has, obviously, a microphone. But don't worry, because it's not listening all the time. Only when you say its name. Wait a minute. Let's hear that again.
Oh, it's always on.
Can it hear me right now?
Nope. It only hears you when you use the wake word we chose.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. It only hears you when... If it's not always listening, how does it know you said the wake word? Of course it's always listening. Okay, so I'm thinking, yeah, this is Orwellian. This is the TV set in 1984 that's watching you while you're watching it. And of course, immediately Amazon addresses that issue.
Is it on?
Oh, it's always on.
Can it hear me right now?
Nope. It only hears you when you use the wake word we chose.
No, that's ridiculous. Right there, that's ridiculous. Of course it's always listening. Otherwise, it wouldn't hear the wake word we chose. Now, the real question you should ask, but of course, you know, she's only a little girl. She wouldn't know this. And apparently he has no clue either, is it always sending data back to Amazon? They don't address that at all. In the, you know, when you have a phone, Google, of course, understands that this is a concern for people, and your phone is always listening. If you have a Google phone nowadays, if you say, okay, I can't say it out loud because everybody gets mad at me because I wake up their phone. If I say this on the radio, I'll use, instead of the word Google, I don't want to say that too loud. I'll use the G word. Okay. So if you say, okay, G word, in many of these Android phones, it wakes up. And what Google's at great pains to say is, yes, the phone is always listening. And it's waiting because it's got a pattern recorded in it that's okay, G word. And it's looking and saying, did he say that? Did he say it? 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 Every, you know, did he, is that what? Is that it? Is that, no, is that, oh, is that? The question isn't whether the phone's always listening or the Amazon Echo. It's always listening. Yeah, of course it is. How would it know that you said the word? The question is Amazon always listening? Is Google always listening? Now, Google says, no. Until you say, okay, G word, we are not listening. Now, as soon as you say, okay, G word, yes, everything you say after that will be then sent to Google. In fact, they even modified briefly, because people complained, one of their phones, the Moto X, to say, checking with Google or something like that. Launching Google to kind of let you know, okay, I heard what you said. I've got the phrase. Now I'm launching Google and I'm going to send it to Google. And I'm sure, the truth is, I'm pretty sure Amazon's doing the same thing, but they don't address this. It's not whether it's always on and always listening. It is always on. It's always listening. It's whether Amazon is always listening. Okay, then just, I had to explain that.
Alexa.
Well, what does it do?
Alexa, what do you do?
I can play music, answer questions, get the news and weather, create to-do lists, and much more.
Is this creepy? I mean, isn't this what we were just talking about? I mean, it's the first step toward this robot in our broom closet that would, you know. Alexa, can you turn on Oprah? I can. Hold on. Or, you know, Alexa, why is my printer not working? I'll check that. So what's the first step to that? And I think we kind of want that. But at the same time, I notice there is this factor that, wow, I've now put a tube, a black tube, a cylinder in my living room that is somehow slightly sentient. Ew. What do you think? Are you going to run out and buy it? $200. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. And as I have pointed out, and of course the chat room is quick to tell me because they like to tell me things. It's just no different than Cortana on your Windows phone or Siri on your... Sorry, I'm not supposed to say the S word either because it wakes Siri up when she's plugged in. And Google's doing it. All these phones are doing it. You know what? I think the problem is I don't... It's that little extra step of the thing in your living room that's listening at all times. I don't know what it is. Does that not feel a little creepy? We'll see. Amazon, by the way, very smart. You can't just go and buy it. You have to get an invitation. And it's only $200. Unless you're an Amazon Prime member, then it's only $99. Why do you think it's half as much if you're an Amazon Prime? Alexa, why are you half as expensive if I'm an Amazon Prime member? Well, Leo, we expect you to buy lots of goods and services using me, and we'll make lots of money. So please have me for free. Why, thank you, Alexa. I don't know. I think we should, you know, the next, I do a roundtable talk show called Twit every Sunday afternoon. Next Twit, let's have Cortana, Siri, Alexa, and what's Google's? Google doesn't have a name. Jarvis. Let's have them all sitting around and we'll have them talk about the tech news with one another. Pretty soon, I feel like the next tech guy will not be human somehow. I think right now, Premier Networks, the Premier Radio folks, have been sampling my voice for 10 years now. Right now, they pretty much have all they need to replace me, right? Are you sure I'm me right now? Maybe this is a clever simulation. 8888, ask Leo, if it weren't me, could I do this? Hello, Heather. Amen. That's the problem, is it? They'd have to sample a lot.
Good morning,
hello,
Leo.
Heather. Amen. Who should I talk to first?
Clearly, the answer is Brian in Winter Haven, Florida.
Actually, even now, I wonder if that tube sounds as good as it does on the ad, because it probably doesn't. They never do. You know, the Cortana Siri ad? Siri is robotic, and Cortana just talks in a normal voice because she's an announcer. That's not fair. That's not fair.
It's Scarlett Johansson.
now, there you go. Celebrity voice impersonated. If I could have Scarlett Johansson in the Amazon tube, I might do it.
I think I want the Graber guy. Is that what I want to say?
Who do you want? Graber?
Some guy that does a voiceover who goes, get it?
Got it. Good.
Oh, man, I want that
wake
guy.
Wake up. It's Thursday afternoon. Get going. I don't want him in my Amazon tube. I'm going to call it the Amazon tube, not the Echo. It's the Amazon, the black tube. That's okay. What it is. You said Brian in Winter Haven.
Yes, I did.
You know, that's where the circus goes every winter.
To chill out? I mean,
I believe Brian will know that. Let's see. Brian, Winter Haven, Florida. Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus, winter home. Am I right?
Isn't that Sarasota?
Okay, never mind. Forget it. if there were only a way I could, some computer I could ask. Hi, Brian. How you doing? Winter Haven's where where spring training is.
There is some spring training here. That is correct.
Yes.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Leo. I called before once about 8 months ago. I actually had dedicated an information technology book to you and your Twit network.
Well, thank you. What was the name of the book?
It was Why Most Companies Fail at Information Technology Security.
Okay. Well, from your mouth to no one's ear. I hope you're wrong, but anyway. No, that's a great subject. So you're writing about...
Read the news, I'm mostly right.
You are mostly right. Yeah, when did you write the book?
About 8 months ago.
Did you kind of predict all of this breach, data breach stuff?
I've worked for several big companies. I've seen how bad most of them are.
Where can we get the book? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
Awesome.
You can search that, or you can search my name.
Do you have a website for it?
No, it's just you can do it on Amazon. Why most companies fail at information technology security.
There you go. Well, what can I do for you, Brian? Sounds like you should help me.
Not on this one, not for sure.
All right.
I have Fios,
okay,
which I love.
Yeah.
I love the speed.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't love how much they get per box for your TVs and for the DVR system, right?
Yeah.
You got four TVs and a main DVR, you're paying an extra $50-$60 a month just for that setup. So I have a Windows Media Center, and I have Xbox extenders, 360s, but I don't see any future.
Yeah, and nor does Microsoft. They stopped making, and no one else now makes those Xbox extenders anymore. I don't know why.
So where can you? I mean, what's the next level? Is it going to be apps?
Well,
you're going to get your TV through the apps only. Our weekly shows on the cable network.
I agree.
And stuff, so that's why I keep it.
So there's a technology called Mocha, M-O-C-A. And this is a technology that allows boxes on the same coax network. And, of course, all of your cable boxes are – oh, maybe they're not. Are they? You have coax, right? Fios converts to coax once it gets in the house, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Whew. It's Multimedia over Coax Alliance, Mocha. And so a number of boxes like the TiVo, for instance, and Xfinity, the X1 from Comcast, use Mocha to transport this data all over the house. And so you need, for instance, on the X1 box, you have one DVR, and you have multiple dumb boxes that all can act using that single DVR. Same thing with the TiVo Romeo. And I think that it's sad because it seems as if there should be a standard. Well, I guess Mocha is a standard, but then you need to have the same boxes on both ends. And, of course, Verizon has no interest in making this possible. They want to rent you all that stuff. Once you get the Fios into, for instance, a TiVo, or as you do it, an Xbox 360 with the media extenders, then you can transport it. The media extenders in the Xbox use the Wi-Fi, which, frankly, isn't as good. Mocha is very high bandwidth. So you can get a lot of data through them, including high-def video. Pretty hard to send high-def video over Wi-Fi reliably, especially if somebody else uses the Wi-Fi or, you have other people working on the network. It can really bog it down, as I'm sure you've noticed. So what I would do is I would keep your Xbox media extender. I wouldn't get rid of it, but no one's making new ones. And when it becomes time to buy something else, I would look at Slingbox, TiVo Romeo. You're already with a cable company, so the X1 is kind of out of, and now if you put Ethernet in the wall, it'd be a little easier. You could do that.
But I got Ethernet in the wall.
Ah! Well, now you have a little bit more capability. You can do anything that works over the Ethernet network. I'll talk about some alternatives in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, so you don't need Mocha if you've got Ethernet. I think, your best bet, since you have Ethernet, is something like Xbox Media Center, XBMC. What do they call it now? They have some silly name for it.
But does the XBMC do live?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's what I miss. That's what I don't want to miss. I mean, I like...
Yeah, you're transporting live data. Yeah, see, for instance, with the Romeo now, I can watch on my iPad through Wi-Fi or any of the TVs, any of the stuff that's on my TiVo.
You're paying a subscription fee for the
Romeo. You pay for the guide on TiVo, which is kind of silly.
With Windows Media Center, and they do actually still sell it with Windows 8.1 for $10.
Right, but they don't make the hardware extenders anymore that you need.
They don't make the extenders anymore, so I got these 360s, and it's not part of Xbox One. But it just seems like, there's a whole market here that's missing.
Let me ask the chat room. Does Cody, or which is the new name for XBMC, or Plex, you could do live video. Can they transport live video? That's a really interesting.
I need to you know, be able to get the cable stations that I like, you know, because I like in for Fios. It's just not all the Fios boxes. And being in Winter Haven, I'm a little too far from Orlando and a little too far from Tampa to get a good OTA signal.
Oh, that's the other one, is home, the HD Home Run. And that's
The HD Home Run Prime is the network tuner I use for my media center.
Yeah. Do they not, can you not use that to spread it throughout the house?
So the HD Home Run Prime, the network tuner,
right,
is what the Windows Media Center feeds from.
Right.
And then the Xbox controllers, they connect to the media center.
But you don't need, I think you can use their extenders instead of the media extenders, right? Do they not offer extenders?
Silicon Dust, no.
Really?
Tuners.
Interesting.
So, I know those are just tuners.
So they're tuners, but they will put content.
No, no, right. The HD Home Run Prime. That'll have a cable car slot in the back.
Yeah, yeah. It becomes your cable box. Right.
Yeah, three different people can watch on three different TVs, but that's not your extender.
No, no, that's a base unit.
Mm-hmm. I guess they want you to
use computers or Android or iOS. I wonder if you could use a Chromecast with this. This is an interesting question. See, it says watch TV on any screen in your network using DLNA. And this works with Kodi. So I think...
you're bringing some kind of computer into the equation.
Yeah, at some point you have to decode it, don't you, at the other end? Mm-hmm. But you may not need a... well, I mean, that's what an Xbox media extender is effectively, is a dumb...
that's exactly what it's
dumb,
doing. Yeah,
small
it's
computer.
Back to the, yeah. That's connecting back to the media center. And the media center is connected to the tuner. You know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. I think the question is, what's at the other end of this? You can use XBMC with this. So, yeah. So the home. So it's good. You've got the home run already. I'm glad I kept you on during the break, because sussing this out is kind of complicated. So during the break, I talked a little more with Brian in Winter Haven, and I found out that he. So this is actually something that I think in the future will be solved. You remember the cable companies and Fi and Verizon, these others, they're disincented to make this too easy because they want to rent you boxes. That's a nice annuity. Every month, $5, $5, $5, or, you know, I mean, it's just great. But the truth is you can roll your own. It's just a little more tricky. You're using something called the Home Run, the HD Home Run Plus, which is a really clever idea, or Prime, I'm sorry. It allows you, it's your TV tuner. It's your cable box because you have a cable card in it, and so... that's how the cable company validates it. You can use that with Verizon?
Yes.
That's great. So they offer cable card on Fios.
Yeah, I've used it with both Fios and with Bright House down here.
Awesome. So that's good. So that now you really got that's the big part, and that's what you're using the Xbox Media Extenders with, because that puts it out over the network. Now, the next step is, well, what can we use instead of Media Extenders? And I am told by... Jeff and others in the chat room, that it does work with Plex. I'm sorry, with Kodi, the Xbox Media Center. So anything that supports Kodi, any device that supports Kodi, could be the new kind of media extender. It also works with Android, iOS. And it supports something called DLNA. So if you've got even a TV within Wi-Fi range of it, you should be able to DLNA with it. That's the form of sending media through Wi-Fi. So while I mentioned that Wi-Fi isn't as fast, I do think that this is something you can do. You're a do-it-yourselfer, obviously. This is a non-trivial thing. Somebody's not going to just buy this out of the box and set it up. But I think using Kodi XBMC with your Home Run Prime will solve your problem. give you live TV on any TV in the house. I don't know the exact details of it, but I think there's your starting point.
Well, thanks, Leo. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate the call, and good luck with the book. It's obviously much needed. You, as he pointed out, Brian pointed out in during the break, you need a processor and some software on the other end. It's not some dumb receiving device, but I think you can do that. And nowadays, processors are so cheap. Computers can be made so cheaply. You could probably, you know what I would do? Get a Raspberry Pi running Kodi on every TV in the house and let it decode it. That would be, those are $35. And they run, and they, you know, they can run XBMC on a Raspberry Pi. Pi. 8888 Ask Leo, talk about geeky. See that now I really need the computer in the broom closet. Oh, let me help you set this up. Neil in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Hi, good day, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. Let me just say that I am not anywhere near the sophistication that many of your callers.
Yeah, and I apologize. You know, I don't want to say to people, oh, you're too smart. You can't talk on the show. But at the same time, I don't want to. It's not smart. That's bad me. I shouldn't have said smart. You're too geeky. Because it's not smart. It's just, you know, somebody's kind of indulged some time and become an expert in this field. But most people shouldn't need to.
Okay.
So don't worry about it. That's okay.
Okay. Well, I'm not an expert.
Don't need that.
Mm-mm. In this world.
Yeah.
Well, here's my a challenge. First, I'll share with you. My mother just recently passed away.
I'm sorry.
And I have a tremendous volume of photographs, you know.
In boxes, in shoe boxes.
You got it. And what I would like to do is to be able to, digitize those so as to be able to distribute them, you know, through the family. However, I'm faced with this reality that I am not a computer expert.
And you shouldn't, to be honest, do it yourself. For many reasons. It's very time consuming.
Okay.
So let's say, you know, you've got, how many do you think? Rough ballpark, 1,000?
Oh, at least, yes.
Okay. So you could get a computer, get a scanner. There are scanners that are designed to do photo scanning, and they're somewhat different, slide scanning. So did you have slides in there or negatives?
Yes, got some old, what I would call black and white type negatives, as well as old Kodachrome.
So, that's good. So you need, and Epson makes them, a number of companies make these that dual, because to scan a photo, you bounce light off the picture and into a camera. To scan a negative or a slide, you bounce light, you don't bounce light at all, you pass light through it into the camera. So there are scanners that will do both. They're two different kinds of scanners. So let's say you went out and you spent some money on those and you got a computer, and now maybe four at a time, you're going to scan these images into the computer, and then you take the four out, you put another four in, and you scan them, and it takes about a minute for each one. It's ridiculously time-consuming, and you're not going to do it. It's just not worth it.
Okay.
So it's not the expense or the complexity. It's not that hard. It's just, unless you're retired, and I do know people who are retired, they don't have much else to do. They watch TV, and they sit there next to their scanner, and they put four in, and they scan it, and then they put another four in, and they scan it. It would be a project of many, many weeks.
Okay.
So what I'm going to suggest, and by the way, we did this. My family had a bunch of slides, which I had many years ago put in Kodak carousels. And, of course, we never saw them again because who's going to set up a carousel projector? That's what we used to do. We set up a projector and look at them on the wall, and that's that. So my sister went to a scanning, and there are lots of service bureaus that do this, a scanning service bureau. The other reason you might want to go to them is because they have some expertise. They'll scan it, but they also, and they have much faster automated systems, they will also clean them up. So, for instance, with slides, there's often dust and other gunk on them. They'll clean them first, put them in there, and they might even color correct the output, and then they give you a CD. And so she did this. We did well over 1,000 slides, and she sent the CD out to everybody in the family. We all have a copy forever. It's wonderful.
Okay. Now, just as an attachment to a word you use, retired, I just recently retired.
Well, so then if you have a lot of time.
You have some time. But in terms of, let's say, the challenge of the computer device, there is a merger, at least from my vantage point, it seems, of computers and tablets. And I don't know if I should be getting a computer to try and work with this, or if I could get a tablet.
You have to have a computer. Can't do it with a tablet.
Can't not do it with
a
tablet.
Because you have to connect it to a scanner.
Okay.
You could, I guess, use a digital camera and an easel in a perfectly lit situation and take pictures of these. Some people do that. If it's just prints, they'll put it on the easel, take a picture, put it on the easel. But you need it. Look, scancafe.com. It's not free. They actually will send you a shoebox. You pile everything into it, and it's a flat rate. It's about 20 cents an image, which I think is well worth it. And they clean it up. They do a very good job. They're not an advertiser, but I think they're very good. Scancafe.com.
Okay, and so in terms of the capabilities of a tablet. This is not something wherein the scanner device would store the images and then transport them to a tablet.
Well, I guess there are such things, but tablets don't typically have a lot of storage. It's really, you need a computer for this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Neil's determined to do it himself. You say, I have lots of time. I want to scan my photos myself. But you don't have a computer, Neil?
That's part of my challenge right now, Leo. I've got an old Toshiba laptop, Windows XP. It is just terribly slow.
Yeah.
So I'm having to make a transition.
I think a tablet's a good choice, but there are some things that a tablet doesn't do as well. You can scan into a tablet. I'm not saying you can't.
Okay. Is there an ability to attach external storage to a tablet? Okay. Okay.
I mean, no. I mean, you. That's a qualified no. There are some Android tablets that have something called USB to go that allow you, with the proper cabling, to attach a USB drive. Okay. The Apple iPad with the proper kit can, but it's not really, they're designed not so much for what you want to do. It really is stretching it.
Okay, so a computer then is...
I mean, if you're going to do this and you... Look, you want it to be fast and easy. You don't. It's already going to be a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to do it all yourself, then you need a scanner that it doesn't have to be connected to the computer. It could be wireless, and you could use it on a tablet. The nice thing about the tablet is once you get the photos on the tablet, then it's very quick to go through them, organize them, and all of that. You could get a wireless hard drive. There are wireless hard drives designed to use with tablets. It's just such a kludgy setup.
Okay.
And there certainly are tablet-like things, like these new Windows tablets, like the Microsoft Surface Pro 3, that is really, it's a Windows machine, but it's a tablet, so it gives you, it's kind of a hybrid. And it would support USB storage.
Okay. On the side of the scanner issue, there are these advertisements for all-in-one. It's a printer.
That's not the kind of scanner you need.
Okay.
You need an Epson scanner that will do both photos and negatives. Epson photo scanner. There are a variety of price levels for this. They're all called Perfection. But you can get Perfection for $1,000 or you can get Perfection for $59. So Perfection has a wide range of choices. What you want is a scanner that will do... I would say you want one that'll do 600 DPI or better, 600 dots per inch or better.
Okay.
And you want one that will do both negatives, slides, and prints. And Epson I've used them. They're very good.
Okay.
And they'll do a good job for you. The problem with the all-in-ones, they're really, that's a business product, and it's really designed for like scanning documents quickly in and that kind of thing. Not a bad thing to have, but
well, I'll do the research on both sides of the issue. One, if I were to try and do some of this myself.
Some of these, by the way, I'm looking now, the modern Epson scanners will scan to the cloud. So you could really you could eliminate the computer. You could put these photos in, scan over, you need Wi-Fi in your house, but scan over to the cloud. So there are lots of services now that offer unlimited storage for photos. Flickr, Amazon, if you're a Prime member, and Microsoft's OneDrive, you scan up to them, and now all 1,000 pictures are stored in the cloud where your family and friends can just download them.
I was trying to avoid the cloud situation insofar as I like the idea of something being archived in hand, always available.
Well, you can always download it from the cloud onto your tablet as well.
Ah, okay.
Cloud is not the last place it ends up. It's just somewhere it goes while you're scanning, and then you download them.
Okay.
Chat room says, and I agree, that the Epson V600 photo scanner is probably a good choice for you. $229, not hugely expensive. It is designed for photo, film, slides. It'll do documents, goes up to 9,600 dots per inch. That's plenty. And it has something Epson calls a proprietary thing called Digital Ice that's designed to clean up film and photos, which is nice. You can do that.
Okay.
So,
well,
I think that's a good solution. It would be, scan to the cloud, and then you could just do it with a tablet. You could use the tablet to organize, name, do some retouching if you wish, and that would work pretty well. An iPad would work very well for that.
All right, terrific. I want to thank you very much for your help and for your listeners that are contributing as well.
They're great. The chat room is fabulous, a wonderful resource.
All right. Thank you so
Thanks,
much,
Neil.
Gil.
Yeah, good luck. Hope you have a lot of time on your hands. Yeah, you can watch Matlock reruns and scan all day. Very relaxing. Relax, have some soup at lunch, and just scan. Or do what most of the people I know do, put it in a box and send it somewhere. I wonder what they do. Do they just hire a bunch of retired people to sit and watch TV and scan? No, they have very fast, high-speed, specialized, very expensive scanners. And if James DeRuvo, who's writing everything down, if you will capture all these links the chat room is sending us, because there's a lot of good choices out there, besides the Epsons, which I've used, we'll put those all in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. I don't know if the Epson Perfection V600 does scanning to the cloud. So that might be something you would want to shop around for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Dan is on the line from Lewiston, Maine, or Lewiston, Maine. I'm sorry. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for taking the call.
My pleasure.
Well, I'm looking for some advice.
Yes.
I bought the iPhone 6, and I love it. It's a beautiful phone. And the battery's good, but I'm looking for an external battery. And basically, I'm seeing a huge variety of prices out there, capacities, everything, and I don't know what to buy. I don't know what's safe for my phone.
So, unfortunately, the iPhone, and this is one of its disadvantages. Like most phones today, in order to get a beautiful svelte profile, a beautiful design, it has no removable battery. They can get more capacity too, by the way, but because if it's removable, then there has to be packaging and so forth. So, if you can do a number of things. The iPhone, by the way, the 6 is the battery life is much better. The 6 Plus, it's even better. And do you have one already?
Yeah.
So you know that you need more juice.
Right.
Because
I have a job where I have to be out.
I get it.
And I never know when I'm going to get back to an outlet to charge.
So there are lots of ways to go with this. But we're out of time. Would you hang on just a minute? Or I'll tell you what, if you want, you can take your answer off on the air because I'll give you a rundown of great battery solutions for your phone when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. Our digital photographic guru, Chris Marquardt, will do a little photographic myth-busting in about half an hour. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. If you have a question or you want to make a comment or a suggestion or you got some help for some of our listeners. We were talking before the break with Dan in Lewiston, Maine. He's got an iPhone 6, just won't make it through the day. You know, this is an unfortunate case with almost all smartphones. In my opinion, a smartphone, you should be able to disconnect it at 7 in the morning and it should go till you go back to bed at 11 at night. If you sleep 8 hours a day, that's 16 hours. And the problem is, of course, everybody uses it differently, but with fairly heavy use, maybe 3 or 4 hours of the screen on, you know, that means I can use it for phone calls, Wi-Fi, and so forth. And there are very few smartphones that will do that right now. In fact, as far as I know, the only one that I know will do that is the rare OnePlus One, which got 19 to 20 hours no matter what I did with it. Most other phones, you need to carefully cultivate juice. Eliminate apps that, for instance, wake the phone up. Facebook is notorious for this. If you have, and most people do, the Facebook app on your phone, the first thing to do is go in the settings on the Facebook app and say, stop checking Facebook, please. Like, turn the refresh interval to never. You might also want to turn off notifications. There are apps you can use to see what's eating all the juice. And, you know, some of them are surprising. For instance, I have a Verizon phone. And Verizon, obviously for, you know, because they make some money on it, installs every Amazon app there is. And you can't remove them, including the Kindle app. Now, I use the Kindle app from time to time, but rarely. But for some reason, the Kindle app, no matter what, even if you've never launched it, which I haven't, is always checking things. Hey, you got any books? Got any new books? Huh? And waking up the phone and sucking down juice, even though I don't want it. So I always disable the Kindle app. Yeah, I know it's not ideal, because what if I wanted to use it? Well, I'd have to go in and re-enable it, et cetera, et cetera. But they're good things to kind of figure out what is using the juice, and you might be able to get it longer. But most phones, even with some reason, and by the way, I don't want to do that at all. I want to be able to have everything installed and use it as I wish and get it through the day. I just got, this is the new Droid Turbo from Verizon, which has a giant battery. It's heavy and thick. You could tell it's got a giant battery in it. And it's given me pretty good life. Not quite 16 hours, but it's given me pretty good life. So in many cases, you need an external battery. Or there are still a few phones you can pry the back off and put a second battery in. My favorite in this regard is the Note 4. The Galaxy Note 4 from Samsung has a pretty hefty battery to begin with. You know, so it's kind of, I find it a little bit discouraging. They make these phones, like the Droid Turbo and the Note 4, that could, if they were using 1080p screens, go easily 20 hours. But then they say, well, we got a lot of juice. Let's put a giant high-res screen on here. And so it's a 2560 by 1440 screen. More than 500 dots per inch. You don't need a screen that high resolution. And, of course, that kills the battery. If they made this Droid Turbo with a 1080p screen, it would look the same. I can promise you, you couldn't see the difference. And its battery life would probably be 50% better. Same thing with the Note 4. The difference is the Note 4, you could pry off the back, pop out the battery, put another one in. So I do this without any of bias. Whenever I buy a Galaxy phone, I always buy a second battery. They're not expensive. And then you could just pop a new one in. Carry the battery around with you. You've got, you know, plenty of juice. The other way to do it on something like the iPhone, where you can't do that, you can't take off the back, you can't put a new battery in, not every day anyway, you buy an external case. And a lot of people use Mophie cases. Those are a good choice. Problem is the new iPhone is so slim and gorgeous and aesthetic. And then you put a honking big case on it. It's honking big because it's got a battery in it. Well, yeah, now I can go all day, but I might as well be carrying a brick in my pocket. The other choice is to have an external battery, and there's a big variety of those. Here's what I would look for. I'll give you some brand names in a second, the two brand names I use. But I think they're all probably the same. They're all made in China, and then companies slap their label on them. A couple of things you're looking at, though, when you buy these batteries. One is how many milliamp hours it has. That's how much juice it will hold. And, of course, the more juice it'll hold, the bigger the battery. So you have to decide how much you need. It would only take between, say, 2,000 and 3,000 milliamp hours to recharge your iPhone 100%. So if something's got, for instance, 5,000 milliamp hours, that's enough juice to charge your iPhone twice. Probably enough, right? You know, if you expect to get back home in a day or two, that's probably enough. So that's one thing to look at and judge. You can get a smaller one if you're content with there. I've even seen some that you could use as a bookmark or put on your keychain. But those aren't going to give you a full charge because the battery's too small. So the easiest way to do that is look at your phone, see how many milliamp hours there is in the battery of the phone, and then you add a little bit for slop, and that's how many recharges you're going to get. The iPhone 6 battery is, it's under 2,000, I think. Let me look real quickly and see. Apple will tell me, I'm sure, won't they? How big is your battery? Probably the chat room is going to beat Apple to this one as I scroll down through the specs. I want to say like 2,200 milliamp hours. That seems to be what I remember. So if you got one with 5,000, that'd be able to charge it twice. The other spec you're going to look at is the ports themselves and how many watts that port can push. And this is a good thing to know if you're starting to get thinking about battery life on a device. All USB devices, all USB chargers are 5 volts. End of story. That's the spec for USB. It's how many amps it pushes out. And, of course, the wattage is volts times amps. So an iPad, for instance, wants a 10 or 11-watt charger. That means you're going to have a 2.2-amp charger, 2.2-amp connector. So, and I think that's probably the most anything needs. So you if you're going to charge an iPad or a high-wattage device, you want to make sure you have a high-amperage battery. Some of these newer ones are what they call smart ports, which can go anywhere between 1 amp to 2 amps. So, okay, now I said I'd say brand names. There's two brand names I really like. My favorite is Anker, A-N-K-E-R. Anker makes, for instance, the Astro 3. This thing is the size of a pack of cigarettes. It weighs more because it's a big battery. And this thing has 3 smart ports. Which you can either do 4 amps overall or 4 amps per port. And it's 12,000 milliamp hours. So that's going to give you 5 charges on your iPhone. Easy. So that's one. And I like that a lot. That's the And then the other one I like is the Jackery. And this is the Jackery is right now a little bit on sale, which is great. The Jackery Giant Plus Premium Portable Charger, also 12,000 milliamp hours, but $40 instead of $45. And this has 2 ports, one that's a high speed or high amperage port, and one a lower port for a phone. A lot of phones, like the iPhone 6, will charge faster if you put a higher wattage charger into it. So it's good to have the additional wattage. So there you can, probably more than you ever wanted to know about external batteries. Anker, Jackery, both good brand names, and then choose the battery size that will give you the amount of juice you need, multiplying the amount of juice your phone needs for a full charge or will hold for a full charge to get that a number. 2,200 amps, 2 days, 5,000. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tim is in Upland, California. Our next call. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Leo. I am a small manufacturing company, and we are looking to put some tablets. We landed a pretty big contract and trying to take the paper out of the shop.
Excellent idea.
So I'm trying to look for a tablet that will allow me to put SolidWorks drawings. We can write. I know it's kind of a heavy load. I had a Galaxy Tab 4, and there's an app for it that was working, but it crashed over and over and over. So,
yeah, there's a SolidWorks Android app.
Right. We just need the viewer.
Yeah, and that's exactly I can't imagine it would be SolidWorks is a 3D design program. I can't imagine that any tablet would support it for creating designs, but to view it, not bad. There are some third-party, I believe, SolidWorks apps for iOS as well. I got to tell you that the new iPad is very fast, but it doesn't have as much memory as the higher-end Android tablets. And I bet you that's the biggest issue, is not so much how fast the processor is, but how much of this model we can get in memory.
Gotcha.
Models are big, right?
Yeah, they're. I'm trying to break them down into smaller sections.
Yeah.
But they're 4, 5, 6 meg.
Right. Yeah. So I think that that's probably where that crashing comes from. I mean, you can make a SolidWorks viewer, but you can't predict how big the model that it's loading is.
Correct.
And so, you know, you load in that model. There is a third-party app on Android called eDrawings that will also view SolidWorks models, and it's available on iOS as well. So you do have the two choices there. And, of course, you could always get a Windows tablet like a Surface that would give you more capability, more power, and more RAM.
I did look at the Surface, and then the Surface is like $1,200.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's why Microsoft compares it to the Apple MacBook Air,
right?
not to tablets, because it's, you know, it's like in that price range. I think a high-end Android tablet probably do you. You said you use the Galaxy Note, the original Note, or?
No, the Note 4.
Note 4.
Or the Tab 4.
Tab 4, I mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most... there is a Pro, a Tab Pro, that... Let me see how much RAM they've put in there. I mean, this is a very high-end... They call it Pro for a reason. It's
right.
They have a 10-inch and they have a 12-inch. And I would expect this to have 3 gigs of RAM. That's what you probably want. It uses their Exynos, their 8-core Exynos processor, which is... pretty hefty. Now, 2 gigs of RAM. That's a little disappointing. I would like to find a tablet with 3 gigs of RAM for you. That's what you really want.
Okay.
The Nexus 9, which just came out, I think has 3 gigs. That's a pretty high-end processor, too, on that one. And it's fairly affordable. I mean, we're talking $400 or $500. Most tablets are going to be that.
Right, right.
You don't need 3G in there, do you?
No, we could do it all Wi-Fi. In fact, I'd like to, you know, have a decent hard drive in there that we can just load them and have them be static on the device itself.
So lots of storage. It won't be a hard drive, but it'll be lots of storage.
Oh, yeah, right, not a hard drive. SSD, I'd imagine.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're all solid state. The Nexus 9 might be a good choice. That's $400, just the Wi-Fi only, and, of course, you add more memory. More memory is going to be bigger. Higher price. It's 64 bits, and I think that is going to be a big deal for you as well.
Right, and so with the Windows tabs too that I was looking at, what the heck am I talking about?
I like this
Yoga.
The Yoga, Lenovo Yoga. That's very good too.
And I was thinking that it would actually let me install it, but it won't run Windows 8. It will run Windows 8, but not 32.
Not 32. Not 64. Only 64 or not 64?
Only 64.
Only 64. Yeah, that's the future. You need 32?
No, I need 64, but the Yoga is only 32.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking, you know, what you're going to want to do is get one and see if it'll work. Unfortunately, the Nexus 9 also is 2 gigs of RAM. Gosh darn it. You know, the only reason to go 64-bit, frankly, is to put more RAM in these things.
Right.
It's a little disappointing. Do you want your guys to be using a stylus on this, or they're just looking at it?
No, I'm just trying. There's this project that we're doing, this has so many parts. I wanted them to be able to look at and, you know, be able to flip it around, and we don't have to print out every view.
Yeah, isn't that perfect?
Yeah.
You know, this is what we're doing. I would definitely try the Tab Pro. I wish that had more RAM. Samsung does have a Galaxy Note Tab. The notes denote stylus. And as a result, the screen is not as good, in my opinion, because it has to be stylus capable. But their Note Pro 12-inch has 3 gigs of RAM. It's a little more expensive. It's $750. I would also look at that. That's a 12-inch. They have a 10-inch as well. I think what you really want, though, is you would probably, if you're going to go Android, you'd probably want a more modern one that can support, that has Lollipop. I would look at the Nexus 9. I wish it had more RAM. I'm stunned that it doesn't. And the Surface Pro is expensive. Everybody's in chat room saying, get the Surface Pro. It's $1,200, kids. That's right. We don't want to buy. How many are you going to buy?
Well, it would be one to begin with. And, you know, it's a pretty hostile environment. The chances of it being, you know, dropped and cracked or destroyed are high. So I don't want to spend $1,200.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
You know, if we can get 300 or 400 or even 500, you can get 2 or 3 of them and still be in that price range. So.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you, I would say look at a Pro from Samsung, because those are going to be 64. You want 64 bits, I think.
Okay.
I think that does make a difference. The Samsung Tab Pro 12.2 has 3 gigs of RAM, but it's more expensive. It's $750. So those are some of the choices. I'll tell you what, people go to techguylabs.com. That's our website. Mm-hmm. And if you've got suggestions for a tablet for Tim, it's got to run SolidWorks, and it's got to do it reliably, no forced crashes. And it seems to me that's a memory issue. It really does. And processor, 64-bit also might make a big difference. Tim, good luck. I appreciate the call. We'll get to techguylabs.com. Go in there and add your thoughts. We've got a few already in the chat room. Galaxy Tab S has 3 gigs of RAM, says KC7FLR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today, by the way, I should mention, is brought to you by those fine folks at Citrix. Love them. They do the share file program I've talked about before. You got to take a look at this. If you're in business and you are sending email attachments, well, for instance, our last caller. Bet you anything, they need to send SolidWorks models around. Those things could be hundreds of megabytes and would bounce back in many cases, not to mention the fact that Leo says don't open email attachments. That means don't send email attachments, because that's a great way to spread malware. And Leo says, remember, email's not secure. So, for instance, it would be illegal. It would violate HIPAA if you're in the medical profession to send patient records via email. No. But you know what's HIPAA compliant? Citrix ShareFile. Secure file sharing and storage. 99% of the Fortune 500. 99%? That means 2 out of the 500 don't use it. That means 498 of the Fortune 500 use ShareFile. Ow! Something like that. My math's not so good. 495. Wow. If you use Microsoft Outlook, it looks just like you're sending an email attachment, but you're not. You're not. What you're sending is a secure link. I should show you my share file. So what I do, I use it for sending audio to the radio stations. So I'll log into my share file account here real quickly. Notice, by the way, it has my logo, the company logo, which is so awesome. This is my share file account, right? So you see the radio shows. So this is what I see. Now, I use the share file plugin, which is automatically synchronizing everything in the share file folders. And I have a bunch of them. I have a Premiere folder, a KFI folder, a Leo folder. So let's say, as I often do, I get a request from WMEQ, and they want some, hi, I'm Leo Laporte. Whenever I'm in town, I listen to WMEQ. So I'm going to send that to them. And here's what my interface looks like. If I'm using Outlook, it will just be a plugin. But if I'm using the web, I can actually do the email from there, or just get a secure link, which I will get. Here's the secure link. I'm gonna paste that into my email, and they're gonna click it. And this is what they get on their. Now this is so easy. They're gonna see my logo. They're gonna see a big download button. They're gonna see exactly what it is, how big the file. This could not be better. But I control it. I can say who can do it. I can say for how long they can download it, how many copies. Look, I want you to try it. It's so awesome. go to sharefile.com, click the podcast listeners link at the top of the page, and use our offer code TECHGUY, one word, TECHGUY. Sharefile.com, podcast listeners link, and use the offer code TECHGUY. And I think, you know, if you're not the person who decides this in your business, show your boss. Show your IT pro. This is such a good solution. I don't use Outlook. No, I just use the interface. It's easy. Sharefile. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You hear that music? You know what that means? It's time for Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Chris is our photographic myth buster, joins us most weeks to talk about digital photography. Do you ever, let me ask you before you get started on your myth busting. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Do people must ask you, and you may even have done this, what do you do to scan photos in?
Oh, yeah, I actually listened to that. I scan my own photos, but then I don't have like big shoe boxes of stuff. I don't have like thousands and thousands of slides. If I had thousands of slides, I would probably not do it because I personally want the control, but then you need so much time. It's amazing how much time you can need.
It takes longer than you think, yeah.
Doing a good scan of a single slide that you scan at a decent resolution, including a second pass for the error cleanup and the scratch removal and all this stuff, will take you anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes for one single slide. so you can buy a good scanner. I mean you mentioned Epson. They have good scanners out there. If you get a bigger one like the V700, that will actually scan a lot more slides than the smaller ones because it has a bigger surface and a bigger backlight unit. But then you end up starting this thing, waiting for ages. Well, first you have to prepare. You do a preview scan. You choose the ones you want to scan, and then you might correct individual ones because one is a bit too dark, one's a bit too bright. So that takes time. Then you start the scan, and then you, I don't know, you go shopping. You come back, and then they're done.
Right.
And then you start the next batch, and it's just going to take ages. It's not very satisfying.
You probably, I'm thinking, I realize, of course, you scan because you occasionally will shoot film.
Oh, yes.
And the only way to get that in the computer for touch-up with Lightroom or Photoshop is to scan it.
Now you can actually photograph negatives
with a
good DSLR, with a good lens, a good macro lens.
Do you just photograph?
I do it on occasion, put them on a light table and just directly photograph them with the tripod with a good macro lens, because that will give you 20, 30 megapixels depending on your camera right there.
Yeah, very high quality. But you have to have the lights, you have to have this easel, you have to have the
tripod.
You need
the setup. It's not something you would do in your kitchen just like that. No,
right. So what do you want to, what photographic myth do you want to bust this week?
I want to bust the myth that the iPhone photo app can't do much, because that changed when Apple updated to iOS 8. And in addition to the regular filters you have in an iPhone, you know, like the ones that make things look a bit like an Instagram photo or something, they have now added a new thing that I thought was worth pointing out, because I use this a lot now. I shoot photos with the iPhone if I'm out and about, and I do little corrections, and you can actually do quite a lot. If you open the Photos app and if you pick a photo, there is this edit button, and then you will find the usual suspects like a crop tool and the filters and things, but then next to it there's this little icon that looks like a dial. And when you open that one up, you get three different choices. And there's one for light, where you pretty much make the picture lighter and darker. There's one for color, where you give it more or less saturation. And there's one for black and white, where you get to do like a black and white conversion of an image. But the fun thing, and lots of people don't know this yet, is that you can drill down into these and kind of do a lot more and stuff that professionals would do. So under the light slider, you'll have an exposure setting where you can just make it brighter and darker. The light slider itself will also do that, but it will also change other parameters at the same time. So it's not just making things brighter, it's also changing the contrast, and it's changing some of the other parameters. And if you tap on the little, like there's a little pull down disclosure triangle kind of thing on the right hand side of it, it opens up and it gives you access to things like exposure and highlights and shadows and brightness and contrast and black point. I use that all the time when I'm out there, and I notice that in a shot the sky is too bright, I bring down the highlights a bit. Or if I notice that the dark areas of the picture, the shadows are too dark, I just separately bring those up. And that's stuff that I would do in Lightroom and in other apps. And now you can do this on an iPhone. I'm pretty happy with that. Or individually changed, like the white balance. That was not really possible up to now. But when I take a photo under tungsten light, there's a good chance it turns out too yellow. And now what I can do is I can drill down into the color setting, into the color dial. And that gives me three choices. One is saturation, the other is contrast, and the third is called cast. And the cast one actually allows you to change the white balance. So if it's too warm, it's too yellow, you can just drag it to the right and take some of that warmth out and just make it a bit cooler and make it a bit more neutral if you want to.
And that's just in the built-in software.
In the built-in software. And that's the thing. Most people don't know that. They just trust that the phone will do the right thing, but the phone will not always get it right. You know, under tungsten light, you tend to have two yellow pictures. Or let's say you shot a picture in the mist. And mist means it's low contrast. Now you can go into the light settings. There's a contrast setting under that, and you can just dial up the contrast and kind of give it some of the contrast back that you lost. Or in a landscape photo, I kind of like the sky to retain all the detail, like the clouds and things. So I will typically like tap on the sky and expose for the sky to make sure it's well exposed. But then after that, I might have to bring it slightly up. So bring the whole thing up with a light slider. And then it turns out that the foreground is typically too dark. So dialing into that light slider and just bringing the shadows up a bit brings that foreground back. And all of a sudden it's like, wow. And the nice thing is it's non-destructive. It doesn't change your actual picture. It doesn't overwrite the picture. You can always go back by going back into the edit dialog, and there's a little revert button, and you tap that and you get back to the original image. So you can't really mess things up anymore. That's pretty cool.
It's, I have to say, it starts with a great image. The iPhone camera is, and always has been, one of the best out there. So it's nice to have that built in. And then there are lots of third-party apps you could download. Do you use Snapseed or any of the other third-party apps?
I do use, but since they changed it, since they incorporated these settings, I don't need it that much anymore. I use some external apps, like you can plug them in as filters into the actual Photos app. So one example would be Afterlight, which is a photo taking and editing tool, and that has lots of great filters, and it exposes all these filters directly to the Photos app. So you tap on a photo, and then there's this little circle with the three dots in the left top when you want to edit that, and in there you can enable other apps that are on your phone that provide some of that functionality for your Photos app. So you can apply an Afterlight filter in the Photos app. I use Scanner Pro to scan documents with the phone, and you can expose that functionality into the Photos app. So if you have like a skewed thing, some architecture or something, you could unskew it just using that kind of a filter plugin. So it's really powerful.
Pretty amazing.
It is very amazing.
What we're seeing is a shift from to what we call computational photography. In the past, really, it's always been about the lens, the optics, the camera. But as we put more and more brain power after the shot into our smartphones, into our computers, even into our cameras.
Dramatically changed.
It has really made a big difference. That's one of the advantages of digital photography is it's... And so to have all of this stuff built into a phone, it's kind of amazing.
I mean, those phones are supercomputers.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you one more question before we go about the scanning thing. What resolution do you scan at? This is a topic that comes up a lot. How many dots per inch?
If I scan a negative, it's typically not the highest resolution because most negative scanners claim to have a higher resolution than they actually have. So a bit lower, 1,500, 2,000 DPI with a regular flatbed scanner at home is a good value.
You can do too high a value, right? Because the bigger the value, the larger
the
file.
The resolution stays the same. It just extrapolates it and blows it up. And
that's not
it doesn't
good.
Really add any information. Right. So 2,500, 3,000 DPI is a good choice and
with
a regular flatbed scanner.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, can be found at, I ran out of time, I didn't get to tell you, at discoverthetopfloor.com. Discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where you'll find all the stuff he does, including his great photo workshops. I think he's coming to New York in the summer of next year. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Greg is next in Glendora, California. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm having a trust issue with Carbonite.
A trust issue?
Yeah, I want to transfer my information from a PC over to a laptop, and I'm just asking, should I trust them to control my computer to transfer my account to it?
That's what they want to do?
But they told me.
You can do it yourself, can't you?
I'm not that good at it.
Oh, okay. I think it's just installing it and then logging in, but that's maybe it's changed. So, yes, you can absolutely trust them. You think I would do an ad for a company you couldn't trust?
Okay, because I'm just worried about you saying about keyloggers and stuff like that.
You're right. You should not give people you don't trust access to your computer. You're so right on that. And, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, our audience gets calls from somebody claiming to be Microsoft saying, we see there's a virus activity on your computer and we'd like to fix it. May I take control of your computer? You should absolutely not do that. In fact, you shouldn't let anybody who calls you give you control. But if you call a company that you know, that for instance, Microsoft, you can trust that. Microsoft, Carbonite, these big names, they're not going to do anything bad to you. But don't, like, if somebody called you and said, hello, I represent Carbonite, I'd like to get into your computer, don't let them. You have to call them, right?
Okay, that sounds great to me, then.
All right, yeah, let them do it, Greg. It's okay. And that's a great use for it, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. Disclaimer, they're a sponsor of the show. And I would not. We're pretty careful. We turn down sponsors all the time. We're pretty careful about who we let on and do ads with. I'm not going to do an ad for a company that's not trustworthy. I know Carbonite pretty well. Know the founder, the boss, the CEO, David Friend, is actually a friend. And they're a very good company, very trustworthy. They were, you know, they outsourced for a while. They thought, well, like every other company, we need to save money. And they had their tech support outsourced. I can't remember where. India? I can't remember. But they realized that their customers just weren't getting the service they needed. So they brought it back home. And so I think when you talk to a Carbonite rep now, you're talking to somebody, is it New Hampshire? But they're great. Much better. It was a good move, right? The right thing to do. Eric, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
How are you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
I had downloaded some image. I had downloaded a website into save for online reading, and I'm unable to get it downloaded onto my computer.
So you put it on a phone?
Yes.
What kind of phone?
Galaxy Stellar.
Okay, so an Android device.
Yes.
The easiest way to do this would be to connect your phone to the computer via a USB cable. When you do that, if it's a Mac, you need a program called Android File Transfer. If it's a Windows PC, you don't need anything. When you do that, your phone will notice that it's been connected via USB, and it will, in the notifications, it'll put up a little thing that says USB connection detected, and it'll give you two choices. It could be as viewable as a camera, or it can be viewable in a different fashion. I don't know what the other one is. MTP, I think. Choose camera I think you want the regular USB connection now. I think the regular USB connection. And you should be able to – what will happen when you do that, and if it doesn't do this, then choose the other one. It'll show up as a drive on your computer. Now you can browse around, find the download folder. That's likely where you put it. You may be elsewhere, but find the folder that's in, and you can just copy those files right off of it. So it's pretty straightforward. Android makes that fairly easy to do. I think you just leave it and browse it that way. If you make it a camera, then it looks to your computer like a camera. It'll treat it like it'll just look at the images. So, yeah, you want the other one. MTP. MTP. Now it's Jennifer in Simi Valley. Hi, Jennifer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
I'm having a problem with my Galaxy 3 tab. And what happens is if I'm on Facebook or if I'm on any of the other apps that I have on there, it'll freeze up for about 5 seconds and then go to the home screen.
It crashes, in other words.
Yeah.
That's what's happening, is the browser is going and then restarting. Have you been keeping it up to date with the updates and so forth?
I just got it. I bought it used.
Ah.
I don't know about any update.
All right. So, this would be a good candidate for doing a clean restore. Did you do that when you got it?
It was pretty clean before I got it.
Okay. So when you...
That's what they told me.
Right. So when you turn it on, the first thing it asks you is what language you want to use. Is that right?
No.
No, it started up normal.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't pre-cleaned. Oh. Or it was cleaned and then something else happened. So I would... You know what? Anytime you buy a used device or any Android device... I would absolutely go into the settings. There's a backup and reset command in the settings and do that. Wipe it.
Okay.
They call it a factory data reset. And I if that doesn't help, I would absolutely do that with a used device. You don't know what's going on right there.
Okay.
And then if that doesn't help, then you might want to apply all the updates. And, you know, the Samsung comes with its own browser. You might want to try Google's Chrome browser, which you can download for free in the Play Store. But the first thing to do is wipe that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I think that'll fix it. Charge it up all the way before you do that. Somebody in the chat room is reminding you. Yeah, or plug it in while you're doing it. But, yeah, anytime you get something used, oh, you really want to reset it. You don't know, you know, what's going on in that thing. And that could be why Facebook's crashing. Facebook does work on a Galaxy Tab. Yeah, we know it does. But it's crashing for some reason. I don't know if you're doing it. I didn't ask if you're doing it in the browser or the Facebook app. Either way, rebooting it and then re-downloading the Facebook app. I think the Galaxy comes with Facebook on it already. But make sure you update that Facebook app. That's going to make a big difference. 8888 Ask Leo. I think I'm going to be out of time here, but I'll tell you what. We have another hour to go. Let's start a call and we can finish it when we come back from your local news. And Walter was on the show, the last show. We ran out of time right before I was able to talk to him. We said we'd call you back, Walter, but Heather realizes we can't. We don't have that capability here. So call us, Walter. I got a line open just for you. No, I don't. Now I don't. I shouldn't have said that. Keep trying, and we'd love to get you on. We said we'd call you back, and we can't. I think they don't trust Heather. They're afraid she's going to call Thailand or something. They don't give you long distance capability. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No international calling. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers. Yes, the internet, sure. Home theater, why not? Digital photography, you bet. And, of course, smartphones. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Give me a ring, and let's talk high tech. Got lots of calls already in here. By the way, for those of you who wanted to know about Walter, he called us. He said, no problem, I got it solved. He wanted to downgrade from iOS 8 to iOS 7. And there's a fairly, I think, long and complicated way to do it. First, you've got to find iOS 7. That's the real challenge. But if you can find it, you can restore your phone to iOS 7. Not recommended, but it is possible. So good, Walter. Glad you solved that. Kevin is next in Sarnia, Ontario, Canada. Hi, Kevin.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Good, good.
What can I do for you?
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Excellent.
Okay, so, Leo, I have a backup system that's not working the way I want it to.
Uh-oh.
A Netgear store, which is a NAS drive.
Yep.
It has lots of videos and images on it. Mm-hmm. And I also use Google Drive.
Okay.
Now, there's some new files on the Google that are not on the Stora, Stora NAS drive, and the same goes to the other way around. Is there a sync solution that I could use to sync my NAS drive with my Google?
Yeah, because the Google Drive is synchronizing, but it's synchronizing with your local computer.
Right.
So somehow something that's not on your local computer got on your NAS. and apparently also got on your Google Drive, and they're different files, and none of, and neither of them was on your computer.
Well, I have about 80% are the same, and then there's about 20% that are not.
All right, here's what I would do. Google Drive doesn't show up. Well, actually, let me ask you. Do you have the Google Drive mirrored on your hard drive?
No.
No. All right. But you do see the NAS drive as a mounted drive, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the best thing to do would be to get everything that's on the NAS and everything that's on the local computer synchronized first. And you could do that with Microsoft makes a program called SyncToy. It's a PC, right?
No, it's Mac.
Oh, it's a Mac. But then there are a couple of good choices. I use something called ChronoSync, but also SuperDuper is very popular as well.
I heard you talk about SuperDuper before, too.
Yeah. So either one of those will do the sync between your NAS, your network attached storage, which looks just like a drive. So it's like synchronizing two drives. I like ChronoSync. It's not free. SuperDuper is free for most purposes. So try SuperDuper. ChronoSync is what I use. It's kind of a brute force, very smart synchronization program. It's really just a front end to built-in synchronization solution, I believe, that's available on all Unix systems and on the Macintosh.
Oh, good. Yeah. Now, I get a second question for you.
But now you've done that. You got to get the Google Drive to synchronize.
Okay.
And that should happen automatically. I presume the Google Drive is synchronizing with your hard drive.
Yes. It stopped at some point.
I feel like if you could get it... Oh, my goodness. I feel like if you could get it... My Google has woken up and is listening to me now. I'm not talking to you. Okay. I feel like if you could get it on your local drive, that the Google Drive should synchronize.
Okay.
But at least you'll have two copies, your NAS and your local drive. They'll be in sync. And then you need to figure out, well, what's going on with my Google Drive? Why isn't it syncing? Google Drive doesn't generally sync in the same way as a local disk does. All right, second question.
Now, that's part of my two places, which you suggest. The other one is I want to put it on a third place. I want to be able to, is there a way to take my Google Drive and put it to my Flickr without having to download it?
Right, so Flickr is just for images, but it's unlimited, virtually unlimited. It's a terabyte on a storage. I don't know of any way directly to go from Google Drive to Flickr. I don't.
Maybe you can ask your chat room.
Yeah. I mean, they've come up with some interesting synchronization solutions that are cross-platform.
Okay.
But the solution I told you about is the one I would go for.
Okay. I got one last comment for you.
Yes.
You talk about how easy the iPad is. I have a 98-year-old grandma that sends me text messages and emails.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that cool?
That is wonderful. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. 2-year-olds can use it, and 98-year-olds can use it.
That's right.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah, I think let's figure out, there's going to be a way, ask the chat room or visit the chat room, there's going to be a way to get that Google Drive backed up. You know what I'm really impressed with is Microsoft is now offering, if you have an Office 365 subscription, you're a Mac user, you might not, but Microsoft is now offering unlimited cloud storage, unlimited.
I heard that. Yeah. That's great.
What I suspect is, this is their OneDrive solution, what I suspect is that this will begin the topple of the dominoes. There's no reason why Microsoft could do it and Google can't. So I think that's a matter of time before you start seeing cloud storage, basically free, unlimited cloud storage everywhere. The only people who can't do it is Dropbox, and that's because their business is charging people for cloud storage. And I worry for them. I think that's a bad sign. If cloud storage is unlimited and free, how are you going to charge people for it? Hey, thanks for the call, Kevin. I appreciate it. I have to think about this. How would you, without copying everything on the Google Drive, get all those photos that are stored in the Google Drive over to Flickr? I don't know. Somebody's saying in the chat room, maybe you use if this, then that. That'll be good for new photos. And actually, you don't really need it for new photos. I don't know. Yeah, if this, then that does have a script. Look at that. For connecting your Google Drive to Flickr. But does it do old photos or does it do everything? Flickr upload to Google Drive, backup Flickr to Google Drive. But can I back up Google Drive to Flickr? Well, we'll put the link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. Melinda in Costa Mesa, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well.
Okay. I love your show. I have ESET and Carbonite because of you. But anyway.
Marvelous. I thank you.
You're welcome. My question is that I'm looking for a good-looking toolbar that I can customize, or actually a home page that I can customize and that looks good. So I'm looking for a home page. And I had my MSN.
Is it just going to be for pictures and personal stuff, or is it a business? Or
no, it's not a business. It's just for my personal
just
use.
You. Okay, good. Everybody, by the way, I think everybody should have their own website. I think that's a great thing.
I'm going to start a website.
Good.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, that's what it is. That's your homepage is a website, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And there are free solutions. Google has one called Blogger. That's at blogspot.com. WordPress has one called wordpress.com. Both of those are fairly easy to use, and you can upload to it and play with it, and it's all free.
Okay.
They may put ads on it to monetize it, but they'll be tasteful and small.
Okay.
That's what you're talking about? Okay, now I think I know what you're talking about. Maybe I got this wrong. You don't want it for public consumption.
No. This is just for me.
I see what you're saying. You want, like, I should have, when you said MSN, I should have understood. You want, when you turn on your browser, when you launch your browser, you want to see a screen that has your stuff on it.
Yes.
Got it. And, of course, a lot of people use My Yahoo or iGoogle, and both of those have kind of disappeared. Does My Yahoo still work? I'll have to check. Nope. So I would suggest there's a number of them. I'm going to give you a list. There's one that, well, I'll tell you what, when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. So I apologize profusely, Melinda. I misunderstood when you said homepage, which is often the term used for a website. No wonder you were puzzled when I said, oh, you need a web page. You mean the start page on your browser.
Yes.
And you'd like to have, what did you, you said MSN, so you like weather.
I had my MSN.
My, so it's weather and news and like stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. And did they stop doing that?
They stopped doing that. They have a new page that's like very busy and with a lot of news from everywhere. And, you know, it's not something, I mean, you can click.
Everybody has stopped it. It's so weird. These are called portal pages.
Okay.
And I guess they have kind of gone out of business. You know, Google had iGoogle, stopped doing it. Yahoo, which I used for a long time, My Yahoo, stopped doing it. Now MSN, stopped doing it. And I think people kind of want this capability, so I'm not sure why these companies are discontinuing it. There are some companies that do things like this. ProtoPage is one, and it's free. ProtoPage.com. ProtoPage. And I've used this for a long time, and it's very similar. You'll see you can drag boxes around, place them in different positions on the page, put links, put news, put the weather. So I guess that's the one I'd recommend. You do need to register to save your settings, but there's no cost to this.
Okay.
And they've been doing this for a long time, and I guess it's their business, so they'll probably not go away, as
okay,
everybody else
is. Nice.
Yeah. Another one that I've used for many years is called NetVibes. Let me just see if they're still in business. Yeah.
Me too.
No, they're gone. Oh, that's a shame. No, nope, they've stopped doing that. It was a French company. So yeah, use ProtoPage. They're still around.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I'm sorry I took so long to answer that. It's actually a fairly simple answer if Leo would just understand. Oh, I guess My Yahoo's still there. They've just redesigned it. So another one that's a good one, and actually I love this one. It's got ads all over it, but my.yahoo.com. They didn't kill it. They changed it. But it's still, you know, it still does what it used to do. And, you know, they just have an ad on it. That's how they support it. So my.yahoo.com. I don't know why I thought they stopped doing this. NetVibes still around? I went to netvibes.com and it looked like they're in a different business. Let me look again. NetVibes dashboard agency. This looks a little, I think this might be a little off-putting. They say they're now in social media brand monitoring news aggregation, data analytics, and real-time intelligence. Isn't that kind of what we're looking for? 8888 ask Leo. Rob in Huntington Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you very much, Leo. Love your show, man.
Walter's back.
You know, it's not, AM radio is not just for old people, okay?
I love AM radio. God bless you. Keep it alive. So it's pretty much talk radio now, though, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
exactly.
That's fine.
So my grandma is actually the one that turned me on to this, and I've been loving it.
Thank you, Grandma.
my editing system, I used to use Final Cut. Are you familiar with a little bit of editing programs and stuff?
A little bit.
Okay. I've been using an external hard drive for a lot of my material. And this is the second hard drive that I've had where it's been unplugged on accident.
Oops.
So, yeah. Is that a big problem, number one?
Well, it doesn't have to be. It just depends on how it lands. Modern hard drives have, most of them have a capability of pulling back the heads when they lose power very quickly. So, and that's precisely for that reason. So that if they suddenly get disconnected and fall off the table, the heads will be retracted. That's the most common a form of damage, physical damage, when a hard drive falls off the table is the head scrapes the platter.
What about internal, though? Because it seems like...
Well, that's internal.
It actually fell. It just seems like when it got unplugged, when I plugged it back in, or this happened several times...
Oh, you're saying it didn't fall, it just got disconnected.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're using a Mac, and you'll notice whenever you do that, the Mac says, whoa, hey, stop it, knock it off. You got to eject me before you disconnect me.
Correct.
Windows doesn't do that. The reason Windows probably should. The reason this happens is modern operating systems are what we call journaled. They don't write out the data instantly. They collect it and write it in a bunch. Now, journaling file systems are supposedly more robust to this kind of disconnection. That's why Microsoft says, you know, it's so rare that you have a problem. We're just going to let you disconnect willy-nilly. But Apple, I think, wisely says, please eject me first. What does eject do? It says, look, you have in your memory buffers data that was to be written. Make sure it's all written and closed properly before you disconnect. And ejecting will do that. That's what the eject process does. That's why it takes a second.
So if it saved, if I had everything saved, and then I was in the program, which was Premiere I was using, and it got ejected, I went to go plug it back in, and then it said... My hard drive was corrupt at the
yes.
point.
Yes. So here's what was going on. Premiere was writing to the drive at the very moment you disconnected power. And that can happen. It's just bad luck. Because what now happens is data gets spewed across the hard drive. If it hits the wrong spot, which it did, then the hard drive is corrupted. It can't be read. Doesn't mean the data is gone, by the way, and you may be able to recover it with the proper software. It just means I can't use this drive because most likely what got corrupted was the file table, the table of contents of the hard drive.
Well, I took that actually to a data recovery place, Geek Squad. That cost me $250 just to
look at it. Yeah.
Is that normal?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot, but it's it's not unusual to have a fee just to look at it.
Exactly. And then so I went down to another place because they were going to take a month. So I went to another place.
A month?
It was going to take a
month. What are they mailing it to China? A month?
Yeah. They had to mail it out. Then it had to go to level one.
Oh,
then level
two. Don't go to Geek Squad ever again.
So basically, right after that, I took it to another data recovery place. They told me it was going to be $250. They had it recovered. But they were only able to extract about 95% of the material on there.
That's about right, because the other 5% was...
So, and that's all my important...
Of course, it's the edit list or something that you can't do. You've got, all the work. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I mean, this is like a month worth of and all that stuff. So I guess my
Nothing more. There, by the way, that it sounds like you went to a good place.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Sometimes you just disconnected it at an inopportune moment, and Premier, messed up a swath of the hard drive. Unfortunately, a critical swath for you.
Got it.
Nothing much you could do about it. There's no magic. If it sounds like the guys knew what they were doing, they were able to get a lot of it back, but just not the key parts you need. I'm so sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking at the beginning of the show. We were talking about that Amazon Echo, the little black cylinder that you put on your coffee table and you talk to and you ask questions and so forth. Amazon just started selling it this week. It's kind of out of nowhere. It's kind of like your smartphone, like saying, you know, okay, Google, or, you know, hey, Siri, or whatever, and it will wake up and you ask it questions. And we were talking about, wouldn't it be nice if this thing could, like, give you tech support, too, like help you? Like, I can't turn on the TV. Would you please turn it on for me and put it on channel 10 so I can watch Oprah, please? And then it would just do it. Wouldn't that be nice? Oh. So, my fiance sent me a text message. She wants to watch the football game on the TV in my den. Now, she's a very bright woman and technically extremely savvy. Is, runs the podcast company, is brilliant. But like most normal people, she cannot figure out how to turn on my TV setup because it's complicated. I got an AV receiver and an Xbox and a bunch of different smart things, and it's complicated. And I was just talking with you, Heather, because it's got to be a genetic thing. I don't mean a gender thing, just like some people can and some people can't, because I don't think there's a television setup I couldn't figure out. I could just walk in and say, okay, well, I see you guys. Okay, let's get this turned on and go to the channel I want. I'm pretty much guarantee I could do that blindfolded. No? Blindfolded. All right. Maybe with one eye closed and one hand behind my back. It's not hard. And I bet you can too, John. John's our studio manager. Of course you can. And you could walk into any setup. You say, well, I see you have an AV receiver. I see you have a PlayStation. Okay, no problem. There's a TV. Okay, show me the remotes. Okay, I can figure this out. Easy. Take 30 seconds. And then there's a whole group of people who just go, and it's not age. It's not gender. I don't know what it is. There's some people who can, some people who can't. I don't know what to say about that. So Lisa said, well, how do I want to watch the game on the den? So I sent her the instructions. It's simple. Listen, step one, turn on the TV with a small silver Samsung remote. Step two, choose cable sat from the longer black Onkyo remote. Step three, turn on the Xbox, or make sure it's turned on, by pressing the Xbox button on the game controller. Step four, then choose TV on the Xbox once you see it on the screen. Now, I got to warn you, sometimes the TV, if it doesn't get a signal right away, it'll turn itself off. So if the screen is still dark, then make sure you go back to step one and turn on the TV with the small silver Samsung controller. Then, okay, remote four, step five, get the Xfinity remote and choose channel 702. That's the channel for the game. What could be simpler? Just seems like a very straightforward process. You may say, and many do say, well, you should get a Harmony remote, because Logitech makes a lot of money selling these universal remotes that are programmable, right? So the theory is, you actually go do this online. You go say, well, I have these are all the things I have. And this is how you watch TV and blah, blah, blah. And in theory, you could pick up this remote and it's got a nice LCD screen and you could say, oh, yeah, I'd like to watch Netflix right now. And it would turn things on and things would happen and there's Netflix. Unfortunately, my experience is it very rarely works because, well, it'll work, but you have to first turn everything off. Because most things now in the technology world are on-off toggles, right? There's not an on switch and an off switch. it's a toggle. So if it's on, it turns it off. If it's off, it turns it on. And that's the problem because the Harmony doesn't know. And so just as likely it'll turn things off that are already on and turn things on that are already off, and you will not get Netflix. Not Mark says, get an Xbox One. It'll make it. No, that's, I have an Xbox One. That's part of, that's step four. Didn't you hear me? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Lisa. I'm sorry. It's so complicated. And part of this is exacerbated, and you probably experienced this. You listen to this show, so there's two reasons you listen to this show. One, because you're the type. We should name these types. The type, type G, the geek type, that can walk into any room and turn the TV on. And then this type, and the type normal type, that goes and says, what is this rat's nest? Could you turn on the TV for me? And there's two people who will listen to this show, type the type G and the type N. The type G listens just kind of for affirmation. Yep, Leo's right on that one. No, he's wrong on that one. And then there's the type N who listens because they're trying to figure out how to turn on the TV. You're a type N, aren't you?
I guess I'm an N. I was going to call it D for duh.
No, I don't want to imply that it's intelligence related. It's not. I think if there's a gene, there's an allele, there's a marker that says you can do this or not.
Mm-hmm. It's just so frustrating. It makes you feel kind of dumb.
Well, and that's the other thing I really want to say. You're not. It's not your fault. In fact, this has been my motto for 20 years. It's not your fault. The people who made this stuff made it way too complicated. You know why? Because they're type G. They're type G. They know. They don't think it's complicated. They say, well, what do you mean it's complicated? You just turn on. It's easy because they're type G. The people who designed this stuff have that gene. They wouldn't be in that business. Unfortunately, they're not designing for type Gs all the time. They're designing for type Ns. And the normal people go, what the heck were you thinking? And it's not your fault if you're a normal person. It's not. This stuff is way too complicated. They've made it too hard to understand. It's design. It's a bad design. And I don't know why the computer industry has not realized this, but it's been this way for years. The people who design this stuff get it. They go, oh, it's easy. It's simple. You swipe in from the left. You pick the settings. You go into the turn on, turn off settings, and you do a restart. It's a snap. It's obvious. I see that when we talk about Windows 8. Of course I can use Windows 8. I'm a type G. No problem for me, but I see this all the time in the chat room because I say, please do yourself a favor. If you're normal, do not buy Windows 8. I say this all the time. People in chat room always say, well, it's obvious. Anybody can use this. What's so hard about it? Well, it isn't hard, unfortunately. It's just you're not a type G. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's what this show is type G's explaining how this works for type N's. Or not. 8888, ask Leo. Charles is in Colton, California, our next caller. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to talk to you, finally.
Welcome to the show.
Well, I've watched you since when you had Sarah Lane and Kevin Rose way back. Was that Tech TV?
Tech TV.
Yeah.
The screensavers, baby.
Yeah, the screensavers. Yeah, I've grown old listening to you. What I have is an iPad. And my daughter bought it in 2011, March, and then she passed away in May.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And, yeah, if you ever see anybody, collecting money for lupus, that's what she passed away
from. Oh, I will. Right after the show, I'll make a donation in her name.
I appreciate it, Leo.
Hang on, Charles. We got to take a break. When we come back, okay?
Okay, no
problem.
All right,
don't go away. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Walter on the line. From Huntington, West Virginia. So your daughter's iPad is locked, Walter? I'm not hearing. That's Walter. Hold on, Walter. I'm sorry. I was talking to Charles. Yeah. And then I'll get to you next, Walter. So your daughter's iPad was locked, Charles?
Yeah. The Apple thing comes up, and then it closes down. I tried a hard restart.
Wait a minute. So you see a black screen with a white Apple on it?
You got it. Yeah.
Okay, that screen, you shouldn't... So it starts up. That's the booting. Is it charged?
Yeah, well, I've got it right into the socket, okay. You know.
So it goes to that, the black screen with the white apple.
Right.
And then it reboots?
Yeah, it'd stay on about 15 seconds, then the apple goes off and it's the black screen. Maybe it's the black screen of death or blue screen of death.
And it was working, though, before she passed.
Yeah.
I think what happened is it's not charged. That would be that's exactly what you would see if the iPad had enough juice to do that and then it said, oh, it doesn't have enough juice to continue on. So you say it's plugged in, but is it plugged into an iPad charger?
No, it's just plugged into the wall with the transformer on it.
Yeah, but is it now are you using the same one? Like the iPad one is a little bigger than the iPhone one.
I think it's the iPad 1.
Do you have a Macintosh, a recent model Macintosh?
No, yeah. I don't.
I think my guess is it's not charged. But you know what I would do is you're near an Apple store. I would go to an Apple store.
Okay.
And they will know immediately what to do, and they have the right chargers and everything. Explain the story. The only issue is if your daughter locked it, you know, had the passcode, you can't get into it. So booting it might just be the first part of a process, but if it then says, what's the passcode, I'm afraid you're out of luck at that point.
Yeah, because that screen never comes up asking for a password.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Okay, I'll just call the Apple store. Leo, it's been a pleasure listening to you, a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome, Charles, and I'm so sorry about your daughter, but I think this is a great excuse to get everybody to donate to Lupus Research. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Walter in Huntington Beach. I'm going to get to you in just a second. He called back. Actually, you know what? Let's do you now. Let's do it right now. Because you called. I'm so sorry. Yesterday, we literally ran out of time just as I was picking you up. And network radio being what it is, there's no chance to say, never mind, don't play that commercial. I don't have the choice.
Okay. Well, Leo, I called Apple this morning, and they told me that I cannot downgrade to iOS 7.
Yeah, and you know what? So here's what I was thinking, and they're absolutely right, by the way. Walter installed iOS 8, and you don't like it?
Don't like it, no, because the assistive touch doesn't work right.
Oh, okay. So you need the assistive touch.
Yeah, with two hands, and it works right with one hand, but I like to hold a photograph up near the top of the screen with one hand and then work my way through the assistive touch menus with the other hand.
Did they change that?
Well, they ruined it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So it used to be that you could use two hands.
That's really frustrating.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, Apple, there used to be a loophole where you could download the iOS 7,
mm-hmm.
hold the shift key or the option key, I guess it was, when you press restore, and it would give you a chance to choose that file and restore. And you could still do that, but it won't work because you'll never activate it because Apple stopped signing iOS 7 at the end of September. That means this is very, 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 very frustrating. There is no way to roll it back.
No. Well, I've complained multiple times, feedback. I also, a few days ago, wrote a letter to a vice president of software engineering. So that's the best I can do.
You know, you might try bringing it to an Apple store and throwing yourself on the mercy of the genius.
Ah.
Because it may be a way that we don't know about. There's no public way, and Apple will tell you when you call them, no.
Yeah.
You could do it by jailbreaking, probably. Probably, okay? But I'm not sure. But I would first, before you do that, because that's got other risks inherent, mm-hmm. I would bring it to the Apple store and explain to them, and you have a very, very good reason to do this.
Right.
They broke the thing you need to be able to use it.
Yes.
That's frustrating.
Okay, I will try that, Leo.
Thank you, Walter.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we didn't get you. I'm glad you called. And, yeah, I had forgotten that this happened September 29th. They decided to stop signing it. It needs to be signed before it can be activated. So you could even install it, but what would happen is it would never activate. You'd never be able to use it. That's a shame. There are, I know, illegal versions probably of iOS 7 out there. I suspect there's a way to get around it, but I would first go to the Apple store And if the genius says, you know, I am sorry, Walter, you have the, what the genius might say is you have every reason to want to go back to iOS 7. We do not have a way for you to do that. If he's a really nice genius, he might give you, you know, an old iPad with iOS 7 on it. And a word to the wise, do not install iOS 8 until you're sure you want it, because there's no going back. Sad, isn't it? One last call. Eric, Richland, Washington. Hi, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, type G.
Are you a type N? You sound like a type G to me.
I sometimes wonder.
Even type Gs get lost frequently.
Yes. My question is, I'm in the process of starting a business, taking a lot of aerial photography.
Oh, neat.
And I'd like to be able to have a link on my website for customers to go to or to look at the videos, to have access to videos. Recommend a site. I mean,
well, almost everybody uses YouTube for this because it's free.
Vimeo or Vivo or some of those.
I also use Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O. Vimeo has a couple of advantages. You can put higher quality up there. They have a paid version, which has no ads. That would be the number one reason I'd use Vimeo. Get the Vimeo Pro, and then there's never any ads or banners or anything like that on there.
And it's all high-definition video.
And you can use very high – if you really want high-def, Vimeo's the choice, yeah.
Okay. And how about a link? I mean, is that just – is that something now if the client links to it?
This is what – so what you want is in what they call an embed, E-M-B-E-D. You want to embed it into your website. So what they see is the video, and they can press play and never leave your website. YouTube and Vimeo both do embeds, but you'll need to put the embed code – in your website's HTML. They have explanations for how to do that.
And I'm looking at using Squarespace for, is that
something
that
no problem at all. That? Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. Both those systems will work very well. I actually like Vimeo for that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what I was looking for. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Eric. Fly safely. I love Ariel. I tell you, it's gorgeous. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks to Heather Hammond, our phone ranger, Nathan Staten, our musical director. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.